Blog Talk Radio.
Hey guys, can you hear me? This is Jesse. Where is John? Okay. I'm trying to get this done. I'm sorry. Unmute you. I'm trying to unmute you. This stupid thing. Hold on a minute. Oh my God. Is that you?
Okay,
now?
There we go.
There
progress.
You go.
How you doing?
Good
evening.
Buddy. Dave cannot get in. Good evening, everybody. I'm sorry about the delay. Let me get to Larry down here. Is that you, Larry? Larry, are you unmuted? Larry?
I think you just unmuted me, Jesse.
Oh, I'm sorry. Hold on a minute.
That's okay. It's Brian.
Yeah, hey, Brian. How are you, buddy? Hold on.
Good. How are you?
Darn thing. Good, good. So I'm assuming I don't know where the heck Larry's at. And Terry, where's she at? Raise your hand, Terry. I'm trying to find guys. I'm sorry we're having this difficulty with Blog Talk. This thing's been acting up like for 2 weeks now. What is Terry's prefix on her phone number? Do you know, John?
I will tell you shortly. Let's see. Four seven eight.
There's Miss Terry. She's right there on time as usual and in line. That is you, Miss Terry, is it not?
Yeah, I'm sitting here trying to tell you what it is.
You know, I can't hear you. Well, good evening.
I know. I was on the phone listening to that god-awful elevator music for the first 8 minutes.
Isn't it terrible, for Christ's sake?
Although, I'll tell you, it's not as bad as the elevator music on my conference line.
Really? Well, you know, poor Dave literally could not log in. I mean, he just could not get in there. So I'm going to host the call. He's going to try, I'm still assuming. If he gets in there, we'll see. But, guys, it is now October 11th, 2016. I cannot believe it. This year is just zooming by. Welcome to our open call. Anything and everything that you can think of, you are more than welcome to ask tonight. Of course, I have to do the disclaimer. As usual, what lies in your debt never, ever provides legal advice. We are not attorneys. We don't purport to be attorneys. And we don't even know what legal advice is. So if that's what you've come to this call for, please go on down the road and go find yourself an attorney. We are not attorneys, and we don't know how to give legal advice. So, again, guys, if that's what you're searching for, go find it elsewhere. It is not in our dictionary. But with that being said, guys, I don't even know how to raise your hand on this one. I have to look at this. How would you raise your hand, John? Do you know how to?
You hit one.
Oh,
you hit
okay.
One to
so
raise your
hand.
If you
have any questions, guys, hit one. Terry, you sent me today something very interesting with the appellate court making a decision that the CFPB, who has just fined like $1.5 or $1.35 billion, is now unconstitutional. So,
yeah.
You know, I don't know where that's going to go. I have no idea. I think Dave Mack is now on the board. Are you there, Mr. Mack?
Yes, sir. I'm finally here. I've been listening to you. I finally was able to get in, but you had already taken the host, and it said, only one host. You're done. Click.
But
yeah.
But you know, Jesse, what's interesting is that was a circuit court, and they don't determine what's constitutional and what's not. The Supreme Court does.
Right. I'm just wondering what the big spiel was, because Inside Arm, I mean, every debt collection, you know, newsletter out there just thought this was just like the best thing since sliced bread.
Spokio was special, too.
I know, but everybody's jumping on it. When I read that this morning, I'm like, really?
Well,
don't get it.
And I'll tell you something. A couple of conversations that I've had with so-called consumer attorneys, over the last couple of weeks have been very revealing as to the level of they just do not get it.
Get what? Anything?
Anything. The whole, I'm serious. You know, all of the FCRA, what the hell it even means. I mean, I can't tell you. If I'm asked this particular question one more time, I think I'm going to have to scream. And that is, well, I don't see anywhere in your case where you proved the debt wasn't yours. How is that going to work? Think about that.
Well, I don't have to.
Under
to
an S2B, where the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals has already ruled, you know, wait a minute. It is not the consumer's responsibility to prove anything in a dispute. It's yours. What did you do? Nothing. Why did you do nothing? Okay? And to have attorneys say, well, you know, it's going to be really difficult because there's no proof. You didn't prove that it isn't yours. Hello, where in the case going forward is an issue of debt? Where? If it was ever the consumer's responsibility in the first place, which it isn't, nowhere in the FCRA is there a provision for relying on a consumer to prove the negative.
The lawyering community is just stuck on the word debt. They think everything revolves around that. And they're wrong, obviously.
Exactly.
Yeah, and this, you know, what's really spinning me is that these are trial attorneys. These are attorneys that are supposed to be, you know, gurus and specialists in the FCRA, and they can ask that stupid a question.
Keywords, Terry.
Obviously
supposed
stupid.
To be.
What?
I said keywords, supposed to be. Experts. Obviously they aren't.
It is really disheartening and frustrating, and I constantly hear, well, you know, fact is not really important. The furnishers are just kind of a sideline to the FCRA. We like to focus on cases against the credit reporting agencies, and then what's underlying it all, that's where the money is. You know, and you know, poo-poo on the furnishers. They don't really mean anything and can't really prove much against them. I'm like, what planet are you on? Where are you living?
Wow.
Unbelievable. But I'm getting a real dose of it, Jesse.
What does Craig think about that?
What? Craig totally understands, as does Tally. When I repeated to her that latest question, you know, that was asked me again yesterday, right out of her mouth, she said over the phone, but Terry, this case has got nothing to do with the debt. It's not about that. They can't even bring it up. And I said, yeah, you get it. I get it. Craig gets it. But I'm beginning to wonder if there's any other attorney in the country that does.
Yeah, it's pretty tough. It's pretty
tough. I mean,
tough.
It's one of the most basic, glaringly obvious areas of the FCRA that has zip, not a zero, nothing to do with a debt. It has to do with whether or not an investigation was A, conducted, and B, reasonably conducted. That's it. There is absolutely no other possible issue or question involved. How can it be more obvious than that? I just don't get it.
Well, Terry, the legal community is set in its ways and set in the way that it looks at things, because in the immortal words of how many judges, well, that's the way we've always done it.
Yeah.
That's what we're dealing with, everybody.
I'm telling you, it just makes you want to scream and shake them and throttle them and just say, good Lord, snap out of it. Wake up.
Well, it tells you how much of an open mind they have. That's really the big issue.
And that's scary.
Well, that's the problem we've got in this country, is so many people associated with the judiciary, whether it be the one in the robe or the people presenting and arguing before them, don't have a clue about some of this stuff. And very honestly, they don't want to have a clue.
They don't want to have a clue. Exactly, David.
Yeah.
But that's our job, you guys. It's our job to work to change this.
Oh,
and,
when
you
I
know,
tried
nobody
to
said it was going to be easy.
You know, and I suppose that's partly my fault for even trying to explain it. But when I did, it was over and over again. I stated it so simply. And, you know, I don't state things complicated. And it still didn't get it. Just, you know, well, maybe, you know, so-and-so is an expert on this stuff. He'll understand. Really? I doubt it.
Yeah.
I don't get it. We're not geniuses.
Yeah.
You know, I'm pretty smart, but I'm no genius. And none of us have had a real problem understanding these very simple and clear factors, you know, whether it's FDCPA or FCRA or the TCPA. It just ain't that hard, folks.
Yeah, it's not. It really isn't, you know. Anyway, all right. Dave, I know you might have some good news. John, I know, has some good news. Anybody else have good news? Hit one. Right, Dave? Just one?
That's correct.
Raise your hand.
Yep.
Well, the good news is we're all smarter than lawyers. Okay.
For the most part.
Good one, Terry. Good one.
Yeah, actually, John just proved that over the week. Over here. Do you want to share what you just came out ahead there, John?
Not really yet. Not really yet.
Oh?
Yeah,
he
doesn't
want
to go there yet.
Yep.
Is it related to what you sent me, John?
Yeah, it's part of a bigger thing.
I can answer
thing.
That for him.
There's way more, but I'll tell you later.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I can talk about mine.
Yeah, well, John can just say he was successful this week. Let's just leave it at that.
Yeah, he had some good success. I'm aware of what he had. We've discussed it.
Yeah, me too.
Well, I've had a good day. I've had an interesting day. I had an interesting day. I'll tell you the first part, and then I'll tell you the last part. I spent part of today sitting in the federal courtroom. And I have the opportunity to finally sit in on a federal civil trial that didn't get canceled. They didn't settle. It actually started today. I was there this morning in time for voir dire, and I promptly was removed from the courtroom while voir dire was going on. They don't want people in there because, you know, there's a lot of personal
information.
Explain
what voir dire is, Dave.
That is where they go through and they make the decision on who the jurors are going to be. They go through the jury pool, ask them all the questions, you know, are you a felon? Have you ever done anything wrong in your life? Do you have any biases? All that crap. They make the decision. They choose the jury. And because there's so many sensitive questions, personal things, stuff like that, the judges just don't want anybody else in the courtroom that's not associated with the trial. So I got the boot for that. So I came back this afternoon. They did that later in the morning. I came home, did a few things, and went back, and I sat in for a couple hours. First of all, they had the opening statements, And it's really very, very interesting. This is a personal injury suit. A woman worked at a meatpacking plant, Tyson, or where they packaged the meat, and she was a forklift operator, was hurt on the job, so on and so forth, and they ended up terminating her, and she's suing on behalf of that. Now, a couple interesting things about it that I won't belabor everything here, but they're very upfront in that she is acknowledging she feels that she probably has about 30% of the blame for the injuries. But they say that Tyson is liable for 70% in their view. So it's not like she's trying to go for everything. She's saying, hey, part of it was my fault, but part of it was theirs. So that's part of it. But there was really quite a dramatic difference in the legal teams on both sides. Of course, the opening statements, the plaintiff goes first. The plaintiff's attorney seems a little ruffled, not super professional, and he read his entire opening statement from a piece of paper. The lead attorney, and there's several attorneys at the table for each one, each side. The attorneys for Tyson, the lead attorney, got up there and gave a rather extended opening statement with pointing to a lot of exhibits that they were going to be introducing, had those up as slides. And this is, here again, this is during opening statement. He did everything without looking at the paper. So there's really a very dramatic difference in the legal teams on these. But it's going to be very interesting to see it go forward. The direct testimony of the plaintiff will continue tomorrow. I am going to be there. They feel that they should be able to get everything done and have it to the jury by the end of the day Thursday. So I'm planning on being there and taking all of this in. It's a great opportunity, I feel. And, of course, Jesse, you know that means I won't be on the webinar tomorrow afternoon. So please excuse me for that.
No worries.
So, yeah, but this is going to be – I'm hopefully going to be able to bring some things back to people about this. Points and everything. I'm finding it very, very interesting, and it was kind of interesting because they sure took notice of me being there as an observer. They said that's very rare. So I'm being noticed by everybody, including the judge. And the other good thing that I have today is I received a settlement check today, and I did post that in the forum. So if anybody wants to go and look at that, let's put it this way. I'm a happy camper. I'll go to the bank with a smile on my face tomorrow. So it's onward and upward. If I can do it, you guys can do it. You know, this isn't my first. It won't be my last. And I do it the same way we show you guys how to do it. So, you know, if I can get chunk checks, you guys can do the same, as long as you're willing to put in the time and effort and do what's necessary. So that's my good news, but I've had a really good day. Really good day. Educational day and a very nice financial day.
Awesome, man. You can't complain about that.
No, I'm not going to complain. On top of that, it was an absolutely gorgeous day here, and it was about 88 degrees. So, you know, it was good all the way around. Good day.
Nice. Yeah, nothing to complain about there. Anyway, if you guys have a question, raise your hand. Just press 1 to raise your hand. Don't be shy. I know we got new members and new callers and all that other stuff. So just remember, if you don't raise your hand, we end the webinar. So not a problem, guys. David, I'm assuming these little question marks next to the microphone mean hands are up, right?
Yeah, that's where those are the indicators. So just hit the microphone button
remember,
next to the headset.
I've never done this board before.
Yeah.
I feel like a complete rookie.
Yeah, well, hey,
all right,
you know, about time you learn how to do this stuff. You never know when I might get run over by a Mack truck.
No. 805, you are unmuted.
Hello, is that me?
Yes, you.
Hello. Hi.
Hello.
My name is Michelle. I've never been on one of these calls before.
Well, welcome.
I'm calling. Thank you. I'm calling because in 2012 I paid a dental bill with a care credit account, and I didn't know what I was getting into. I had taken a dental loan to pay off a dental bill once before, and it had just paid itself off. It wasn't this care credit thing. Anyway, I just set it up on automatic payments, and after 2 years, it kicked in with about $6,000 in interest, in accumulated interest. And now it's 2 years later, and I've paid probably about $13,000 in interest. The bill was for $10,000. And now I still owe $8,000, and it's accumulating at 26% daily.
Holy Lord.
And I don't know what to do. I don't know if there's any way out of it.
Any thoughts, John? I don't know if there's a way out of it. Yeah. Any thoughts, John?
I don't know.
Like that?
I don't know. That's...
Yeah, first thing is look at the paperwork and see whether what they're doing is allowable per the contract.
Well, I have called them. It's I've looked online.
Not them.
It's a horrible company.
Yeah.
I think what Dave is
trying to say is that you need to take a good look at the paperwork and check and see if the structure of that loan, the interest they're charging, and, in general, the terms are even allowable by your state statute. You don't know that.
I don't.
You can't go by what they tell you because more than likely they'll lie to you.
They're going to tell
you
whatever
right out there.
is in their best interest.
Yeah, you need to look at the actual documents that you signed. I'm assuming you got copies of those, and hopefully you still have them.
Yeah. Well, I'm not very good with paperwork, but if I can't find them, I can get them again from the dental. It was a dental university that's supposed to be, really ethical, but they didn't advise me of the kind of loan they were getting me into.
Yeah, well, you need the. I believe my opinion is you need to start with the paperwork, and you need to read through it very carefully and see what the terms are. Chances are they weren't very favorable to you, but maybe they've gone beyond
probably
those
not.
Terms. And from a legal standpoint, there that'll give you an idea of whether they are operating within the contract that you made with them. If they're not, then there's things that you can do. But I think that's really your starting place as far as
and
I can see.
And is the contract within the confines of your state statutes as well?
Okay. All right.
Does that answer your questions?
Well, I mean, if it is there anything that I can do?
Well, first you have to ascertain what's there and what isn't.
Okay.
Yeah. You got to get the details. And then once you've got the details, absolutely come back and have that information available and come back to one of the calls. And then we can have further discussion on it based on what you find.
Maybe
make some suggestions on actions you might take.
And where would I find what the state allows? Do you know? In terms of interest rates and
you just check in interest rate, laws.
State,
or,
you can
or
Google state statute
state.
On contract interest statute.
Okay.
Play around with the terms. Just Google it. State of whatever your state is.
Okay.
Exactly.
All right, we'll do. I will. Thank you.
Yeah, that's incredible. 26%. It's like bank robbery.
Jeez.
Right? It's absolutely bank robbery.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me at all.
How do you get rid of the question mark?
You don't get rid of it.
What
I do, Jesse, is I mute them, and then where the name would be, I just type done in there. Right underneath you click underneath 805 and it'll open a little window. I just type done in there. That way I know that one's been taken.
I'm surprised that you can't get rid of that. Interesting.
Yeah. They can do it by pressing the one key and drop themselves out.
No worries. All right. 913.
Hello. How are you?
Hello. Doing fantastic. How are you?
Very well. Thank you. And I have an opposition to my motion to dismiss, everybody. And, you know, I've been reading and rereading it. Here it is. And it's due Friday. And I wanted to put in a motion for an enlargement of time. I'm not sure I'm going to get it. But I'm still working on it as if I may not get that enlargement of time. And so
you mean for your response to their opposition?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
I'm calling it a reply. My understanding is it's called a reply.
Yeah,
right?
It's a reply to their opposition to your motion to dismiss. Right.
Well, I thought I would go over my outline with you, if that's all right, because I have some questions along the way.
Before you even get there, did you confer with the other side about an enlargement of time?
Well, I put in a call Monday, and I emailed today. I have gotten no response from the attorney. And
did you state in your email that unless I hear from you by noon on Wednesday, I'll be forced to seek the relief I'm entitled to without your cooperation?
Oh, God, no. I didn't put that in the email.
Well, you haven't been through the webinars. If you've been through
the webinars. Yeah, you do have to notice them that if they don't respond to you, you're making the effort to confer, but you will file your motion notifying the court that they did not respond.
Okay, just so you guys know, she's in state court where she's been sued.
That's not okay. You can still confer via email in state court, and in your certificate of conference, you can put in there that you attempted to, but the other side failed to respond. She made a phone call. She sent the email. The email's attached as Exhibit A. She did it in good faith. You know, she said in her email, this is my good faith attempt to confer, blah, blah, blah. If I don't hear from you by noon tomorrow, I'm going to file my motion. And then she puts it in there that she, you know, I couldn't determine whether they agreed or not because they failed to respond to me. But I did call and I did email. And the judge is going to go, okay. And it's reasonable if you ask for an additional 7 days on a reply brief, 10 days on a reply brief, because you're pro se and you have to go to the library, you know, the law library at the courthouse in order to do research because you don't have a research staff or you don't have a Westlaw account or anything like that. The judge will buy that.
That's great. Well, is that something that I have to set a hearing for, or does he just grant that?
No, because here's the way it works. When you put in a motion for enlargement of time to respond or to, you know, to reply on a motion, as long as that motion's pending, it extends the deadline.
Very good.
See, the court might come back and say, you know, well, 10 days is too much. We'll give you 5. And, you know, by the time you get that in the mail, they've got 3 extra days on the mailing. You weren't even apprised of it until you received the court's order in the mail. Generally, those state courts have busy enough dockets, you know, it's just going to ride. And the judges, you know, I remember when I started out with this stuff, I used to sweat over it and wonder, oh, my God, am I going to get a response or not? Basically, the court doesn't have to do anything. They're just going to see whether you respond on the day you said you were going to respond or not.
Yeah.
If you don't do it when you said you're going to do it in your enlargement, then boom, you know, forget it. You're dead meat.
Mm-hmm.
But if you do what you said you're going to do, they're going to trust you that much more in the future.
Right.
Exactly.
Okay.
So anyway, sorry to take you off track there, but it's important for people to know
great.
That the enlargements aren't so much of a big deal if you just, you know, take it the way we showed you on the webinars.
Well, I noticed in Kansas, and that's apparently I missed that in the webinar. Was that a motion to dismiss webinar?
there's tons of webinars. When you get into the webinar archive, there's a guide
that tells
you. There
is a motion to dismiss in there. There is. Dave, you did one, didn't you? It's specifically for handle a motion to dismiss.
I've done so much stuff I can't even remember all of it. there's a ton of stuff in there, like John said. Yeah. One quick thing that's in my mind, and I want to throw it out real quick. When you're doing a reply to their opposition, generally your reply needs to pretty much just address issues in their opposition, rather than trying to bring up more stuff and buttress your motion that you put in the beginning. It's your reply generally is just going to be a response to what they put in as an opposition, just so to keep you on track there.
Yes, thank you. And I do recall that from Jurisdictionary. I have begun studying that, albeit a little late, but here I am.
Oh, well, Jurisdictionary is a great resource. Absolutely. And we recommend that to everybody.
And if I could recommend to everybody, do it as early as possible. Don't wait as long as I did. But I have to say, I got pretty motivated, you know, when I got this memorandum in opposition. And if it's all right, I would like to say that he quoted a case that is more recent than Haynes v. Kerner. And so that concerns me. He says that
there isn't anything that's negated Haynes v. Kerner.
But in Jurisdictionary, doesn't it say if you quote something, a case more recent than basically or older than your opponent, then you lose?
Okay. Let me throw something out here. Your opposition that you got quotes something that says it's more recent. You need to go read it, because I doubt that the conclusion in that case in any way overshadows or overtakes Haynes v. Kerner, because Haynes v.
Kerner is
Supreme Court, U.S. Supreme Court.
Yeah, it's...
And I'm not aware of anything that's turned Haynes v. Kerner on its ear, not in any way, shape, or form.
Okay, very good. Very good.
But you always want to go, without fail, you guys, you always got to go and read these cases that the other side cites, because you'll find probably 50% or more of the time the cases are actually supportive of your side, and they're misconstruing language that's in them. They're very famous for that, so go read them.
Imagine that.
You can turn that around on them.
Well, could I, I guess I'm a little bit of a shortcut person, and if it makes sense, and, you know, if I just go ahead and, I mean, I could spend pages and pages like he did, obfuscating, where he's forcing me to spend pages and pages elucidating. If I do go ahead and put in Haynes v. Kerner and state it's a Supreme Court decision, I could just move on, couldn't I? Because there are other points to cover.
Well, here again, if he's put something in to argue that, you need to know what he's arguing.
And point out that it's not analogous to the case.
Right.
Or relevant and is distinguishable from Haynes versus Kerner.
Okay. Oh, that is wonderful.
Yeah. You got to be careful with trying to take too many shortcuts. Sometimes you got to do the long thing here and read, because what I just said about 50 to 60% of the time, they're actually turning things around and they're misconstruing it. They'll pick certain dicta out of a decision that basically supports their view and hope
it's
that the court won't, that you won't pay any attention to it. No, they'll BS you, and the court won't look at it, and they get away with it. I've called them on stuff like this on more than one occasion myself personally. So don't, and the others of us that litigate have run into the same thing. It's very common. It's not unusual at all.
Well, I will lock horns when I feel that it's necessary, I guess because this is my first time, and I feel like the time is so short for me to do this. that I appreciate the reminder that I really do need to address everything that the attorney has put in this opposition.
Yeah. Now, keep in mind, the chances of you winning the motion to dismiss
mm-hmm.
probably aren't that good. Now, you said it's over the contract issue. Obviously, they must have made put in something in saying, well, you know, you're misinterpreting or this or that. I don't know what their argument is. But a lot of times a motion to dismiss is going to be denied. The majority of the time it'll be denied.
Okay.
But what you're doing is you're buying yourself some more time to do some studying in the meantime. But that doesn't mean
yeah.
you let off and don't fight the battle. Absolutely not. Don't think I'm, you know, suggesting that in any way, because I'm not.
Right. And in the meantime, on the side, a couple of weeks ago, I had started drafting a federal lawsuit. And so I wonder when I'm supposed to jump in and go file the federal one. I'm only one person, and I'm distracted. I need to, you know, answer this.
Well, your state case, so that you don't find yourself upside down and having made a procedural error there and, you know, get a judgment against you, that has to take precedence. But once you've got that settled, so if you get by your motion to dismiss and then the
mm-hmm.
case is going to be moving forward, that's when you can go back and work on the federal stuff, because you've got a little breathing room there, because, you know, the case isn't going to come to trial in, you know, 10 days or anything.
Right, right. Well, one thing about this particular case is that he didn't call it, well, I better say it more straightforwardly. The petition is called Petition on a Credit Card Pursuant to KSA Chapter 61. So I proceeded as if it was, you know, breach of contract. I don't know if that was incorrect.
Well, what is KSA 61 say?
KSA 61 is, you kind of caught me on that one here.
These are the details that you got to pay attention to. You can't
mm-hmm.
make an assumption and say, oh, well, you know, 61, well, it must be breach of contract. No, you have to know. You can't make any assumptions. Assumptions can be the death of you before the court, believe me.
Uh-oh.
It's civil procedures for limited actions. He would have. Did he say an article that went after Chapter 61?
No.
Well, it's just generally there's 41 articles to it, and they start out with jurisdiction and go through general provisions, including costs, appeals, evictions, you know, judgment, discovery, process. It's the rules of civil procedure.
Hmm. He hasn't really said anything.
No, he's just saying
he's
I'm following the rules of civil procedure. I mean, that's just to throw another thing to throw you off. Debt collectors are normally, you know, what they do is they wave their hand up to the upper right, way up, say, look up here, look up here, look up here, and punch you with the left hand when you're not looking. That's
exactly.
The distract game. And like you were saying, when do I file my federal suit? As soon as you can. Because they're going to distract you with as much BS and minutiae as they can to keep you from doing what you really need to do. You need to fight their action in state court, but you also need to file your federal suit. And you said you did a motion to dismiss. Have you answered your complaint yet?
Yes. In Kansas, an answer is required.
Well, an answer is required every place, but you can do a motion to dismiss before you answer the complaint.
Yeah, you're supposed to. As a matter of procedure, you're supposed to.
Yes.
Right. Part of the procedure that I've laid out in the beating credit card section is the first thing you do is you move for a 30-day enlargement of time to find competent
mm-hmm.
counsel. Then the next thing you do is instead of answering the complaint, you file a motion to dismiss. And then when that's over with, if you don't get the dismissal, then you file your answer and affirmative defenses and you immediately file another motion to dismiss. And while all that's going on, you get your federal suit ramped up and the other side served. Now, you've missed that portion, but you've at least put in your motion to dismiss. So as soon as you get a break, you need to file a federal lawsuit against them because that usually stops them in their tracks.
Well, I kind of need to do that because I will say I made and you know, well, I guess I'm starting to think I have made errors on the motion to dismiss. Like, I didn't, like, double-space the part of the middle, the paragraph.
Who cares? You're pro se. You could literally do it handwritten if you had to because you're pro se. Don't get caught up. They're going to pick you apart and make you feel really uncomfortable. But the judge is going to go, and everyone on the call is going to agree with me. The judge is going to go, at least this lady is standing up for herself. 98% of the lawsuits that come through here, no one even shows up and they get a default judgment.
Yeah.
So yeah. I'm going to give her the benefit of the doubt. You know, whether she wrote her answer by hand or whatever, at least she made an effort. And you get, you know, if you remember in school, you always got partial credit for at least writing an answer down. Now, you've done more than that. You've put arguments out there, and the guy's going to pick you apart on your penmanship or you didn't space the lines right. Come on, give me a break. You know, you can plead ignorance because you didn't know those parts of the rules. Obviously, did he say that in his response brief?
Well, yes, there's a part two, argument and authorities, A, standards for pro se litigants. He's quoting that it is well established that a pro se litigant in a civil case is required to follow the same rules of procedure and evidence which are binding upon a litigant who is represented by counsel. He cites a case, and that's the one from 1986, and that's Kansas. He says, our system cannot function on any basis other than equal treatment of all litigants. To have different rules for different classes of litigants is untenable. A party in civil litigation cannot expect a trial judge or an attorney for the other party to advise him or her of the law or court rules, or to see that his or her case is properly presented in the court. A pro se litigant in a civil case cannot be given either an advantage or a disadvantage solely because of proceeding pro se.
Yeah, he hasn't
said
much.
He's just trying to intimidate you with that BS
right,
in there.
Right.
Yeah.
There are court cases out there that basically say that pleading is not a game of skill. Okay, you know, so just because the attorney knows some crap doesn't mean he gets an advantage, and you're not required to plead to the level of an attorney. So
and you
just
know
because,
what? I've seen that kind of stuff backfire with judges.
Yep.
You know, like the 11th Circuit panel, for instance, they don't like it when an attorney comes up in front of them and tries to show off that he knows everything even better than the judge, that can really rub them the wrong way.
Yeah.
Sure does.
Right. And there's one other thing that when you get a brief moment, you should look through. It's called the Rules of Professional Conduct. That's what governs the attorneys. And nothing pisses them off more than when you start punching at them that they're violating the rule, the canons of professional conduct. Right? So if he's picking on you that way, he's giving you legal advice. He's telling you, no, this is how you do it. And and you're not his client. So why is he giving you legal advice?
Exactly. I see how, I don't know how you call it, but it is the smoke and mirrors idea. He's blowing smoke at me and reflecting something back to me in a distorted manner.
Right. Well, you've heard Dr. Graves, and he talks about the fact that it's an axe battle, and it's your job to plant the axe squarely in his forehead. So that's all they're trying to use. They're distracting you so they can go in for the kill. Do not be distracted. Do not be intimidated. Do the best you can, and you'll do just fine.
Well,
You really want to drop the axe between his eyeballs? File that federal lawsuit, and you'll see all of a sudden his attitude will change.
Yeah, because he's got to hire a $400 an hour attorney to represent him and his law firm and the party that he's supposedly suing for.
Mm-hmm,
so.
Mm-hmm. Well, can I, well, I need to finish point for point here a little bit, and then maybe next week I can call back and just ask a few questions about the federal lawsuit. For instance, you know, they're trying to present me with a fillable form, and I kind of balk at a fillable PDF.
Who is trying to fill you with it? Who's giving you a fillable form?
Well, I've got a pro se packet from the Tenth Circuit here, and you know,
from the Tenth Circuit.
Tenth District.
Right, but you're going to do your lawsuit in the federal court, the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
District Court. It's not your local appeals court or anything like that, or your circuit court. You're going to sue them in the federal court, and it'd be like for what is it, Dave? There, the Southern District of Kansas or whatever.
Kansas only. It's a District of Kansas. There's only one that covers the whole state.
The Federal District Court
of
Kansas.
There's only 25 people that live in Kansas, remember?
Well, I think it's 33 now. They've had a couple bursts in the last 2 years.
Yeah.
But no, there's just a District of Kansas for federal court, and you're going to have a complaint that's written from scratch, not a fill-in form. That doesn't work.
Exactly. And you know, the lawyer that's suing you probably isn't even admitted in federal court and will get very nervous when he gets a complaint from there. But that's what you got to do. And do you have a job? A daytime job? Hello?
Did we lose her? Yeah, we lost her somehow or other.
Oh. I was going to tell her that we've got the 3 calls at night during the week and the 1 in the daytime tomorrow. So, you know, she doesn't have to wait till next week. But she'll call back in.
She's listening. She dropped off somehow or other. She dropped off. I don't know what happened. I don't know what the hell happened to her. She's gone. Gone. All right. So we'll go to 973. You're unmuted.
Hello?
We're here, buddy.
Hello? Oh, good evening. I've been trying to get on for the last 2 weeks. I'm all right. I got 2 questions. It's about a foreclosure. I had a loan modification with Wells Fargo, and I did the 3-month modified, and they said I had to do another few months. And so I sent them in a payment of $1,167. They sent the payment back to me saying insufficient funds.
Yeah, I answered your question on the forum, if I'm not mistaken. I wasn't completely clear.
Yeah, I wasn't
completely clear whether they cash a check or – my question to you is, and this is what I was wanting to ask you, is was there insufficient funds?
No, there wasn't. That's what I'm trying to tell you. The mortgage was for $1,167, and they sent me back the exact same amount that the mortgage was. So when I called and asked them why did they send it back, they said, well, it was insufficient funds. So I asked them how was it insufficient if it was the same amount as the mortgage. So long story short, they said they investigated, they looked into it, but then 2 weeks ago they sent me a $700 check from where I don't know. Unapplied funds from $700. And it says it's from unapplied funds. So I don't understand. So if my mortgage was $1,167, you sent me back $1,167, but you kept $700 of it. I don't know what's going on. I don't know how to go about what's, because I called them and asked them. They told me it wasn't nothing wrong. But even if it was insufficient funds, where was this $700 at, and why didn't you apply that to whatever was insufficient?
Well, now that you say insufficient. Yeah, what you're saying, I'm wondering if what insufficient funds means in this case is that you didn't send enough money to cover the bill, not necessarily you didn't have enough money in your bank account.
But this is the problem. The money comes straight out of my account. So, and when I called him, see, when I sent them, when I paid it over on the phone, I paid it out my account. I called them the next day because they did this to me before. I called them the next day. I said, did y'all receive the money? Yes, we received the money. Was it posted? Yes, it was posted. I waited another day. The next day come, did y'all receive the money? Yes, we received the money. Is it posted? Yes, it's posted. Then the next month come, I go to pay my mortgage. They said, we didn't receive the mortgage from last month. And I said, well, I called y'all on three occasions, and y'all said it was paid. Oh, well, it must have been a mistake. So I'm like, it was a mistake? Like,
you got
to
send them
said,
qualified written request in for their accounting is what you got to do. Because it sounds
now
to me like
starting
you want,
foreclosure.
What I would ask, huh?
So now they start foreclosure, though.
Yeah, I would send them a qualified written request ASAP and ask them that you want a billing statement or a bill accounting for the last, say, 6 months or 7 months. Because it sounds to me like this is like a wrongful foreclosure, like you're paying, you're trying to pay, and they won't let you pay.
Exactly.
And if you can show, you can get your bank statement and show that they cash those checks every month, then they got no way to foreclose on you.
But and that's the problem that I'm having. They sent the money back to my account in the same amount that the mortgage was for. And I didn't understand it. Like, why would you send the same amount that the mortgage was for back to my account and say I didn't have enough money? But
yeah,
then,
so you can just
like,
show that. If you have the transaction, you know, going in and out, then what leg do they have to stand on to foreclose? If you can show a judge, look, every time I send them a payment, they keep crediting it and then uncrediting it. Credit, uncredit. What's the problem? What are they trying? What are they up to here?
And then they send me back $700, say that it was unapplied funds from somewhere. I don't know.
Yeah,
just said
I would
unapplied funds.
I would ask them what the hell that was for, personally.
So send them. So I'm in the process right now sending in the qualified written request. And
correct.
Is it a debt validation? Should I get the debt validation or
you got it?
And I should dispute it or no?
Qualified written request.
Yeah, you should ask them for an accounting under the qualified written request for the last 6 months.
So do I send that to their lawyer and them or just them?
You can send it to both. It doesn't really matter. You can.
And I got one more question. My mortgage.
Sure.
Shows up on Fannie Mae. And it shows that Fannie Mae owns my mortgage. But I went on the mayor's website, and I got a MIMS number, but it says from 12/12/2005 with Wells Fargo on it. But I didn't start dealing with Wells Fargo till 2011.
Yeah, and just so you know, if you go to the website, you'll read the Fannie Mae guidelines in their book where they actually say they don't own any mortgages.
So I got
so they
a printout
can't own
saying
a
that.
Mortgage.
So what is this saying that I got?
I have no
Fannie
idea.
Fannie Mae owns your mortgage. I went on what lies in your debt. I went to Fannie Mae. I plugged in my name, my address, my social security number. And it says, yes, Fannie Mae owns your mortgage.
Yeah. Now send Fannie Mae a letter and ask them, do you own my mortgage? And you're going to see they'll say no. We're
so
only
the
investors.
Website just...
Yeah, they don't own anything.
So Wells Fargo own the mortgage?
No. Now you just made an assumption that's not there, see? You follow? Don't make those assumptions because we don't know if they're there or not.
So what do I send Fannie Mae something? Send Fannie Mae the QWR to?
Yes, right. And ask them in there straightforward, do you own this mortgage?
Yeah, see you start creating discrepancies when you've
got
evidence. Like if you could take a screenshot where they say that they own your mortgage and then you send them that QWR, and they come back and say, no, we don't own your mortgage. Well, okay, where's the truth and where's the lie? You see what happens? You can set them up from what you just told us. You can set them up to give you, to have two different things that they say. All right? That creates doubt for anybody, including a court in the future, does it not? You know,
yes.
Well, they say they do own it. They say they don't own it. Where's the truth?
Okay, so now what do I do with this MIMS number that I got?
Nothing. Don't worry about that right now.
Don't worry about it.
Just hold
by sending these letters, you get responses that come back that you can use later to punch holes in their arguments.
Yeah.
Because they argument on a thing called business records. And to be accepted as an exception to hearsay, foundation is required. Part of the foundation is an inquiry into whether these records are complete records. If they're not complete records, then there's daylight created for the argument that the business records are objectionable based on the fact that they are incomplete. So if one thing says that Fannie owns it,
yeah,
and Fannie says they don't own it, you know, if this one's saying this thing and that one's saying that and the records don't match up, then there's daylight there for you to argue the record's incomplete and they don't have standing to foreclose. Okay? So you're protecting yourself down the road, but you got to do your work now.
Okay.
Yep.
So basically right now I'm just sending in the letters.
Send a letter to,
yep,
Fannie saying, you know, QWR saying, do you own my mortgage? And send them a screenshot of where it says they do. Send your servicer a QWR asking them for the financial records that Jesse talked about. You could send the attorney that too. And send the attorney a debt validation letter because they're a debt collector. And you can sue them,
okay,
in federal court just to enjoy your afternoon. You can sue them in federal court and many afternoons after that because they are a debt collector. So you can, you know, you can put the brakes on everything and get records that you can use to punch holes in their arguments in the future.
Okay.
Okay.
Right, thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks a lot.
All right, buddy. All right, let me type in my done here so I know that we're done. And we will go to, where did he jump all of a sudden? 407. That's Larry, all right?
Yeah, that's Larry.
407.
He's ignoring you. You got that 1941. I don't think you've done that one yet.
Yeah, that's
the one
John.
Above there.
Oh, no. Above,
no, that's
there,
not John.
Yeah, 941, you're unmuted.
Good evening. This is Jennifer in
Good
Sarasota.
Evening.
I have a couple of questions. First, there's a bunch of Supreme Court justices and appeals court justices on the ballot this year. Is there any resource we can use to evaluate these people in regards to a lot of these cases we're concerned about?
I'm not
as sure. As their decisions that you might know about?
No, I don't know of any. Do you, David, or guys? I don't know.
No.
Not off the top of my head, no.
Okay. Now, to my case, a couple weeks ago, there was a phone call, and I was just catching up on some of the calls recently. And, Jesse, you mentioned that an attorney that's not assigned to your case cannot make an appearance in your case, or if they do, you can sue them. Is this correct?
That's correct.
Now, what does that look
like? You got to get this, yeah. You got to get this correct now, all right?
Right.
With this. It's, for instance, if the attorney's with a different firm, what happens is they'll use a lot of fill-in attorneys. Okay, so
right.
John is John's firm, and
you know, Dave is on the record, but John shows up. No, I'm filling in for Dave. Well, you're not on the record. You're not the attorney of record, and you can't bind the client. What are you doing here? You follow?
Yes.
So basically, they are a stranger to the case. They are trespassing on your case. That's the easiest and the best way I can possibly put it. They are trespassing on your case.
I understand that reality. How it's translated into a lawsuit.
An FDCPA lawsuit.
Okay.
It's an FDCPA, and if you're in Florida, it's FCCPA.
Taking a legal action they're not legally entitled to take.
Yeah.
Even if there
and
was
to a certain extent,
firm.
it doesn't matter. To a certain extent, it could also be tortious interference.
Yeah, but that's too complicated for.
Right.
Right.
FDCPA is very easy.
Would I have had to object to at the hearing?
No, you don't have to, but you should have immediately. But what if you didn't find out after the fact?
I didn't know who
yeah.
he was.
What if you didn't know until after the fact?
Okay.
That's right.
Okay. All right, and one more quick question.
Sure.
Aquin has been the plaintiff in the lawsuit in my foreclosure. They assigned
right.
it to another company that assigned it to another company. Now, Aquin is moving the court to substitute plaintiff. How does Aquin stay the plaintiff to do this?
They
kind
don't.
Of stuff
they just moved to substitute party plaintiff. So they're trying to be, or there's somebody else is trying to step into your case, correct?
Right.
Okay. Yeah, they've assigned the mortgage, correct? So have you been
right.
notified of all these assignments?
Yes.
Right in the middle of your case.
Right.
Have you set anything for these assignments? Have you done your research to make sure they can't even do it? Are they bogus assignments? You know, I'm just wondering what you've
well,
done with these assignments.
Well, yeah, they've been prepared by the lawyers, you know. In the cases to move it forward, they went to a company for like 4 months, and then that company assigned it to Ditec. Aquin bailed just before trial. They
right.
assigned me to somebody else. So the trial hasn't happened. It's over a year ago. Then this other company assigned it to Ditec about 6 months ago, and nothing's come. They won't talk to me. Because it's my husband's on the note. So everything I send to them, they send back to me. So.
Just is your husband deceased or alive or what?
Yes. No, he's passed.
He's passed?
Yes.
But you're on the mortgage maybe or no?
I'm on the mortgage, yes. But
yeah, Florida law requires you on the mortgage, correct.
Right. They won't respond to my QWRs or anything like that. They came back and said, you can't talk to me. So they're proceeding in the estate of, and everything the correspondence is all to the estate of.
Right.
But, I was just curious as to if they assigned it, you know, so long ago and other people have become the servicers, they're still the one who moves a substitute future. That was my question. So we're just, I guess, we'll see what happens.
Well, I just don't see how they cannot talk to you. Your husband's passed. The estate would move over to you.
Yeah, I'm on the mortgage. They keep sending it back to me. Anyway. I don't know where to go from here.
Are you on
when
the note?
When I show up in court, they acknowledge me. So.
Say what?
Are you on the note?
No,
no
I'm
she's
on the mortgage.
Not. That's part of the problem.
And when I show up in court, which I have since 2011, I've been in court with, you know, with Ocwen and the other GMAC and the others. You know, the court says hello, and I proceed. Of course, my husband's still alive, but I have been in court with Ocwen past, just 2 years ago now. And the court, of course, acknowledged me, but now in the correspondence to DITEC, they haven't and won't, and they keep sending back my validation, my QWR. I wanted to send one to the law firm. I expect the same thing back. So I'm just not sure how to proceed, like you're talking about, to get the record clear.
Well, I don't know. That's
okay.
Just weird. That's so weird. But the court would acknowledge you too, right? It's what you, yeah.
Oh, they did, yeah. Yeah, because I'm on the mortgage. And it's just, I think they're just stonewalling. And I'm just going to have to press through somehow.
You know, there, I don't know that we have it in Florida, but we did find it in Georgia where they have certain elder abuse laws that enlarge damages substantially. You know, instead of FDCPA for $1,000, it's like $10,000 an incident. And you might talk to either an attorney that's an elder advocate or legal aid. Legal aid's usually very busy, but an elder advocate, because they might just be, you know, BSing you because they figure you don't know, and that they figure that they can do it. And they might not figure that you're smart enough to know that that's against the law.
Those companies
don't need lawsuits that they're abusing elders. And they, you know, and they don't need lawsuits that they're abusing service members. You know, service members are in the public eye at the moment. But, you know, and you're in Sarasota, right?
Right.
Which used to be an elderly community. It was a retirement community.
You're making a presumption here. Very well founded. Yes. Yes.
Well, you know, I lived in Tampa in the 1980s, and I remember that Sarasota passed a law that, I think it was Sarasota, they passed a law that you had to register your children with the police department because they had an elderly population. But anyways, be that as it may, you need to talk to an attorney because, if they get the threat of that against them, they might turn around and start talking.
I appreciate that perspective. Thank you.
And the local media usually has a consumer advocate person in a local TV station, and mortgage companies don't need to have stories like that out there, or servicers or lawyers. So, you know, it depends how far you want to push things, but it's amazing how quick things can turn around.
I've been pushing it all along.
I know you have.
Okay. Thank you so much. I will take that approach. Thank you.
All right. Sweetheart.
You're welcome.
Bye.
All right.
Bye.
Bye-bye. That's terrible to hear stuff like that. But unfortunately, it happens, and it happens more regular than we'd like to admit.
Right. And there is recourse. People need to take advantage of that.
Exactly. Exactly. All right. 913, you are unmuted.
Hello? Hello, I'm back. This is a Kansas gal. I was desperately trying to get back to you, but I couldn't get back in time, you know.
And you just disappeared when I was about to tell you, because you said, well, maybe next week I could call in. But we have 3 calls a week, if you don't realize it, Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday night, and plus Wednesdays at 3:00 Eastern, there's a webinar, and you can call in and ask questions. So you get a lot of opportunities. I was asking you if you had a daytime job and you could do Wednesdays or not.
Well, you know, I can be flexible on my job.
Well, there it is. It's between 3:00 Eastern. It's usually from 3 to 4 Eastern on Wednesday. You find that call-in information on the website. Tomorrow night's Terry's call at 8 p.m. Eastern. Monday night's Dave's call at 9 p.m. Eastern. So you got ample time to, you know, to ramp up with your questions.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well,
that's,
I appreciate that. Well, I wanted, if I may, may I ask a question or two tonight
sure.
In addition to what I'm doing? All right, thanks. It appears to me that this attorney is trying to take my motion to dismiss, call it a summary judgment, and he finishes with a summary judgment of his own. Is that standard in this?
He's trying to turn. You mean, is he making a motion for summary judgment?
Well, first of all, he's saying that my motion to dismiss should be considered a motion for summary judgment. Because he said that I introduced.
How can that possibly be? I've never
well,
heard of such
a.
Let her finish. Because you introduced.
Yeah. Isn't that weird, John?
No. What did you introduce?
Well, it's hard to tell, actually.
Okay, let me ask
what
you a question.
What did he say? What is
he
saying?
He says, I mean, I'm going to quote it exactly here. Because defendant has chosen to include matters outside the pleading, her motion to dismiss should be considered a motion for summary judgment subject to the provisions of KSA 60-256 and Supreme Court Rule 141. As defendant has failed to comply with these provisions concerning summary judgment, their motion must be denied.
Okay, what he's saying, okay, when you do a motion to dismiss, you can only address the matters in the complaint itself. If you introduce
right.
anything else, which generally the standard in federal court is if you enter in any evidence to support your motion, then it must be treated as a motion for summary judgment. So he should state in there what exactly you did. He gave you the procedural reason, but what exactly did you say in your motion that it should be construed as a motion for summary judgment?
I will say, you'll bear with me. Basically, what the template said. I'm trying to get there.
Where did you get your template?
Honestly, I don't remember. I'd like to say it was
We don't use templates. We don't use templates. You have to read your rules and write accordingly, and we give you guidelines and stuff, but we don't use templates because then you get arguments. You get arguments that don't apply and you run into problems.
Okay, well, I will... I'm so sorry. I'm so stumped here.
No,
but I do,
somewhere
I
in there.
I
somewhere
don't
in
that
there,
I
where.
Anything.
No, I know, but somewhere in there, he has to make the argument, not just that you violated this rule and that it should be a summary judgment. It should be a summary judgment because she stated blah blah blah, which wasn't in the pleading.
I see. I'm going to put a little sticky note on that one because I knew that I hadn't added a material fact to it.
Well, there
and
you go. So what you're going to have to do is sit down and read the complaint, read your motion, read his response, and then the stuff will stand out. And if you probably don't have time tonight, but tomorrow night on Terry's call, we can review that. And at the end of tonight's call, they'll give you the call-in numbers for Monday night and Wednesday night. Okay.
Oh, you're in the webinar tomorrow too. So we got a webinar tomorrow. Don't forget.
Yep.
So.
There's a webinar tomorrow.
Yep. 3 o'clock.
Cool. 3 o'clock.
Get that information on the website.
Oh yeah, that's right. Tomorrow's Wednesday. Well, one thing here is that he puts in a statement of facts and he basically reiterates his allegations one by one. And I'm not, he seems to be trying to enter his allegations as a statement of facts in this opposition.
He's treating your motion to dismiss like a motion for summary judgment. And he may be doing that to distract you. But if you didn't put anything extra in your motion to dismiss, then all that that he's talking about is extraneous. And the court, you know, if you can read this over, then you could say in your reply brief to the court that the court need not look at X, Y, and Z that the plaintiff has put in there because it's inapplicable to the motion that I presented to this court.
Wow.
It, you see, you can just bypass a lot of this stuff if that's the situation. But you need to read the complaint, you need to read your motion, and you need to read his response. And then you'll be able to analyze it.
Well,
do it with a pad and a highlighter.
Pad and highlighter. And also, I will say that later on, at the end, he said that I put in the word alleged agreement, and that was wrong. And so when I look here at my – finally have my motion to dismiss on the screen for you, but I put plaintiff sues on a contract and apparently does not know when it was allegedly executed, if at all, and fails to attach the alleged agreement.
Right. But remember, that's your – that's your statement, and you're absolutely correct that they failed to attach the alleged agreement. So there isn't any agreement unless they can produce one. He's trying to handle it differently. He's trying to handle it like in North Korea, you know, where you have summary execution. You walk in, they put you in the chair, they say you're guilty, and you're killed. That's the end of it. He's trying to treat it that way, and but that's not the fact. The fact is that his complaint's deficient because he didn't attach any evidence to it. Without any evidence, the complaint needs to be dismissed. It's unfounded. There's no foundation.
Right.
See, in Florida, there's a rule. It's 10.31 that states if there's basically if there's no attachment to the complaint that would point out to what they're suing upon, right? What the suit is based upon. It's dismissed, and that's what we always sue upon. For instance, if they sue you for a credit card account and they don't sue you under credit card or under account stated, they're suing you under the credit card account and they don't have a copy of that agreement in the complaint, it's dismissed. If they sue you under foreclosure and they got a mortgage, your original mortgage and your original note, but no no assignment that would prove that this lender that's suing you actually, well, then it's dismissed because the mortgage and the note don't reflect the plaintiff. See, everything leads back up to the plaintiff, and that's your rule. It's the four-corner rule. When you do a motion to dismiss, you're trying to point out all the defective parts and pieces within that complaint. You can't go outside it. That's the four-corner rule. So you always stay within the four corners of the complaint. Make sense?
Right.
And when you look
at a credit card lawsuit, when you look at a credit card lawsuit, there's two ways they can sue you. One is for breach of contract. In order to do breach of contract, the contract has to be attached to the complaint, the credit card agreement. If they do account stated, which is account stated theory, is, oh, we loaned you money, but there is no contract.
Right.
Well, then they can't plead for attorney's fees and they can't plead for extra charges or interest because, you know, it's their word against yours that any of those were there. All they could do is really go for a balance due. And they would have to be
able
to provide an accounting on that balance due. If that's not attached to the complaint, then, you know, it should be dismissed. That's just the way it is.
Right.
It can be dismissed, and they can come and sue you again and come up with that documentation. But at least this should be dismissed. You could tell the judge it's reasonable. If they did that to you, you'd do the same thing, Your Honor, wouldn't you? You know, they can come back and take another bite of the apple if they can come up with the documents. But they haven't here. The complaint should be dismissed. It's a waste of the court's time and resources.
Yeah, and it's interesting because he's the one wasting their court's time, not me. But I want to say there's a point.
You know, a lot of people try to stand up to the debt collectors, and then they roll over. Or the number one thing is they make people feel guilty.
Yeah.
That's why most people don't even show up and they get default judgments, is because they feel guilty because all their friends and their family have told them, well, you borrowed the money, didn't you? You know, you, even if the amount's not right, you must have borrowed something, didn't you? Because they wouldn't be suing you otherwise. And, you know, it's just the system is rigged and they're taking advantage of people. It's not like it was, you know, eons ago. So, but you got to stand up to him. You're doing the right thing. You're just getting caught up in him stating his arguments. You take it apart, read the complaint, read your motion, read his response to the motion, and you're going to get a better picture of what's going on. You can kind of mark it up as you go, make a photocopy of it, mark it up as you go, and then we'll be better able to discuss it tomorrow. But it sounds like you got your head bolted on right. You're just getting caught up in his BS.
Well, it annoys me because I want to get ahead to my federal lawsuit and slowing me down, you know?
No, he's not. No, he's not. As
if
I always say, the only one slowing
like
anybody down is yourself.
Right. If you read the stuff like I told you and you mark it up, you know, mark up a copy of it, not the original, mark it up and call in tomorrow on the webinar when we discuss that. You probably feel a whole lot better after that. And then when it comes time for Terry's call in the evening, you can discuss your federal lawsuit and how to approach that elephant. You got to carve that elephant up and eat it in bites, not all at once.
Well, I'll be glad to do that. And, you know, while we were talking, I noticed that there's a word missing in one of the sentences here. So I was,
that
you
doesn't
know,
matter.
Careful.
You're really nitpicking things. You're really, really nitpicking. You're too far into the detail. No. You're far into too much nonsense. Trust me. Quit being so nitpicky and start looking at the bigger picture.
Okay.
It'll serve you a whole lot better.
Very good. Well, it's been a lot of fun. I thank you all so much. And I will be glad to be on the call. It's probably 4 o'clock my time in Central Time. So I will be there. Thank you, everybody, and have a good
night. All right, sweetheart.
It's 2 o'clock Central Time tomorrow afternoon.
Yeah, not 4 o'clock. It's an hour behind, not ahead.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, you're on Central Time, so it's 2 o'clock.
Yep. All right, let's keep moving. We got other callers that we got to get to here. All right, 517, you are unmuted.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, we sure can.
Oh, okay, good. This is John from Michigan, and I was just wondering Freddie Mac, when you go into foreclosure, according to their guidelines, they pull that mortgage out of the pool, supposedly, and then they put in another loan to cover that loan into the pool.
Yep. It's all supposed. Yep.
Yeah. So when they pull that out, there's basically no owner of it. Am I right or am I wrong?
Well, it's all investor owned. Yeah. Just understand that anything Fannie does is all investor owned. Right. They don't own anything.
Right. But yes. Okay. Okay. Yeah. But once they pull that loan out of the pool, that loan is sitting out in nowhere land. Nobody has the right to it. Am I right or am I wrong on that?
No, I still think technically, since it's in default, the owners would still be those investors.
Even though that they replaced it into that pool?
Yeah.
Even though they replaced it with another loan into that pool.
He's talking about when they invoke the credit default swap options. And then credit default swap option is actually a type of insurance. It's not real insurance, but it's a type of insurance. And whoever was the person or company selling the credit default swap options, they would be the party that would be entitled to take and hold that loan at that point and somehow liquidate it. In theory, but that's just not the way the banks and the system works. You know, the servicers usually just continue to collect money and put it in their own pockets, and then out of their slush fund, just like Bernie Madoff, they make payments to the people that have bought into these trusts that don't really own much of anything. I mean, that's more of the reality. But if you're just worried about your loan being in limbo someplace, no, because the servicer is going to try to collect money on it. They might move it from their regular servicing department to their special servicing department, but someone's going to be in the business of collecting on it, no matter, even if they don't know who actually owns it.
Yeah, they aren't going to say anything about the credit default swaps, because then that'd be letting the cat out of the bag. Oh, well, this has been paid off, so then there's no balance due. So that's not going to happen.
Has anybody at What Lies in Your Debt found out the insurance companies that are backing these mortgages?
Insurance companies. It's companies that issue the CDOs. Like Goldman Sachs and other places.
Okay. Yeah, so that would be going down a big old rabbit hole if you...
That's an elephant hole.
Right.
Believe me,
okay.
It's an elephant, a really big elephant hole.
Right.
Yeah, what was the insurance company that we all bailed out in 2008 or 2009?
AIG.
That's the one who insured all of them. That's what took them down to the tune of $50 billion.
Right.
Okay.
That's what took AIG down.
Well, let me ask you this. I called in and I talked to John and about this, but I sent you a note, Jesse, on the forum. But my house was sold, and why can't I go after the overage? Because if
you can. What do you mean, why can't you? You're entitled to it.
Well, I know, but you wrote that I couldn't go after the overage when they sold it to the new owners.
No, that's not correct. That is correct.
Oh, okay.
You only can go over the overage of the foreclosed amount. So if it's sold at bid, right, somebody comes into the courthouse for the auction and you owe 100 and somebody bid it up to 110, you are entitled to the 10,000. But if nobody bid on it and the bank foreclosed on what it was owed, say the 100,000, then they turn around and sold it at market for 110, well, you're not entitled to that.
I see. Because I was wondering about that, because you had said go after the overage, because why would the bank overbid if the note came in?
No,
at
the
a
bank
certain...
wouldn't. The public does. It's not the bank.
Oh,
it's the public that does.
Okay. Yeah, see, I screwed up there, too. I mean, the whole thing has been a big screw-up, but... All right,
you follow
so,
me? So
one
if
more...
the guys are investors are hungry for it, they'll bid it up like they used to in Florida. Hell, you'd go to a foreclosure. I had a part-time business for my sales guys just chasing overages, literally all day in 5 counties in Florida.
Huh. Wow.
Yeah, because your house would be worth $300,000 and it would sell for, and you would owe, you know, $150,000. And it'd sell for $220,000, $230,000, $260,000 at the courthouse. So all that money difference at $60,000, $70,000, $80,000, if you didn't go get it from the court would keep it.
Okay. All right. Well, let me ask you this. Now, if because my mortgage was a city – well, it wasn't really, but it was city mortgage claims to have bought it, right? So – If they're reporting on my credit report now, where it's killing me on my credit report, is there anything that I can do to go after fraud on that if I got proof of Freddie owning it or saying that they owned it?
Yeah, no, that's not proof. Saying that you own it and own it are two different things, and we all know that Freddie and Fannie don't own anything.
Right, so even though City Mortgage said that Freddie owned it,
doesn't
what about
matter.
That?
That's just word. That's hearsay, right?
Well, what if you, well, all right, well, what if you had paperwork on it from the Freddie Mac?
Now you keep presenting all these what ifs. I don't know. I'm not standing there with you looking at what you have. So far, what you've told me means absolutely nothing. So, you know, what if, what if, what if, what if, what if, what if? Well, shit, you know.
Right, right.
Too many what ifs for me.
Well, I know, but I'm trying to get out from underneath this credit report now, though. With or do you think I'm just dead in the water?
Nah, I can say you can always find something to play with on that credit report. But you know, the fact of the matter is that the servicer has the right to report on it, and no matter who owned it, they had the right to report on it. Because they were controlling it for whoever owned it, right? So at the end of the day, it is not much you're going to be able to get rid of there that I can think of anyway. How about you guys? I just don't – it's not something I see that you're going to be able to get rid of.
Unless you know,
dispute it till you drive them nuts.
If Citi is the servicer and they say Freddie owns it, the trade line should be marked that it's a Freddie Mac loan. Somewhere on there, because they're just supposed to do that. But you know, that's fighting the FCRA battle is a lot of work with the lawsuits. Ask Terry about that. But it is doable. But you got to plead very particularly. You got to know what you're doing, and it takes a lot of studying. As far as getting stuff off your credit report, because you were saying that your credit's bad or whatever. There's a whole nother process on the website where you got to send a bunch of dispute letters and dispute and hammer them, and you'd be surprised how much stuff you can get off of your credit report.
Yeah, because I'm kind of scared to go after it if Citi Mortgage won on that mortgage deal. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
but they're not going to the credit reporting agency doesn't go down to the courthouse to verify anything. Someone has to actually send them the paperwork to actually prove it up. And if you keep hammering on the credit reporting agency that, you know, verify, and the other side hasn't verified it, they're doing an automated thing with a computer. Eventually, they can get tired of you and just delete the trade line.
Okay.
I mean, we've got members where they've actually deleted their whole credit file and say, you don't have a credit file with us anymore, just because they've pounded on them so much. Whether that's right or wrong, that's to be litigated. But you can get rid of things off your credit report by disputing.
Okay. All right, guys. Well, that's all I got for now. And I'm kind of stuck here, it seems like. You know, I lost that.
No,
house
you never
guy.
Stuck. You just got to keep doing what you know to do, you know?
Well, I know, but I already lost the house, so I mean.
You want to clean your credit up, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and if you want to do if the trade line's not being reported right, you know, if you can identify a violation somehow on your credit report, you can sue over that and make a couple bucks off of it. So you can do two things right there. You can sue, make a couple bucks, and you can clean up your credit report. So there's always something you can do.
Okay. All right, guys. Well, I appreciate all your help. And
all right, buddy.
We'll be in touch. All right, thanks.
Yes, sir.
Thanks a lot.
All right, pal. All right, David, I don't see any more hands up. You want to go on and go over the calls?
Oh, I think I can do that. We have the webinar tomorrow. You know, there's been some discussion of that. 3:00 Eastern time, that's 2:00 Central, and that's for all the members. If you're not a member, shame on you. You better hurry up so you can be there tomorrow afternoon. But that's open discussion. Unfortunately, well, actually, fortunately, I won't be there tomorrow. I normally am, but I'm going to be sitting in federal court learning, which hopefully I'll be able to bring some stuff back to you guys. But again, the rest of the crew will be there tomorrow afternoon to answer your questions, and that's fair game, open questions for any subject. So it doesn't matter whether you got FCRA stuff that Terry can help with or foreclosure that Jesse is
top-notch on, or FDCPA, any other stuff that John handles, get in there, get your questions answered. There's a little more time to have some specific discussion on those issues during those webinars as well. Then, of course, tomorrow night is Terry's call. That's at 8 o'clock Eastern. If you haven't gotten on her email list, send an email right now to queensongbird@gmail.com. Simply say, please put me on the list. Put it in the subject line if you like. And then the rest of the week, for all the members, of course, you have access to the forum. If you guys haven't been in there, when you go in, go down to the success section. I put a posting in there, and I got a copy of the check I got today. That should give some people a little bit of an incentive. If I can do that, you can do it too. And it was a nice five-figure check. It wasn't four figures. So there's lots of information in the forum that's been posted. There's over 20,000 postings. There's, almost 6 years worth of postings in there. So there's a lot for you to study on and learn from, not to mention all the other information in the website. Then, of course, next Monday, after we get done with the weekend, we start all over again with Dallas Debt Discussion Monday night. That's still on TalkShoe.com. And the PIN for that is 54318. And that starts an hour later than the Tuesday and Wednesday calls. That starts at 9 o'clock Eastern. And we're always there. I've never missed a Monday night, and we're in the eighth year. So there's always availability of help there. And, of course, education and helping you guys deal with the information that's in the website is why we do these calls. These calls are not a substitute for being a member of the site, because the site gives you all the organized information to study, and then when you have questions about how those pieces fit together for maybe your particular situation, that's where we can help you by answering those questions on these calls. So if you're not a member, get in there. As we've said, Jesse and I have talked a lot about this. We both trade. We've got bad times coming, guys, and maybe you're sitting okay right now, but there's going to be some dire things coming the way of this country in the not very distant future. And where you might be fine right now and you don't have any problems, most people don't ever think they're going to lose a job until it's like, oh my God, I got fired today. Don't leave yourself in a situation where this kind of crap happens to you, and then you are sitting there going, oh my God, I got these debt collectors calling me, and I don't know how to deal with all this stuff. That's where you should be saying, man, am I glad I got ahead of the curve and joined the website and started studying and learned this stuff. So in case it happened to me, I have a real head start. I may have to do some more studying, but I've got a big head start on how to deal with this when it comes down the pike. Believe me, it'll make a big difference. Don't be a deer in the headlights in the future because you procrastinated and thought, I don't have any problems. I don't need to bother with that. I can just listen to these calls and kind of learn from that. So get yourself ahead of the curve instead of behind the eight ball. Jesse, all yours.
All right, buddy. God bless you guys. Thank you for joining us. We will see you tomorrow, 3 o'clock sharp. Most of us will. Dave won't, but we will. And Dave, be checking in with us tomorrow night, I guess, on Terry's call, too. So we know about what's going on.
Yes, I definitely will be. Yes.
All right, buddy. You guys have a great night. Thank you so much, guys.
Good night, everybody. Good night. Have a great evening.
Good night, guys.